This is a moose. Adult, female, 1,000 pounds. It's late winter and there's not much to eat, so she goes to a tree, jams her lower teeth into the bark, scrapes upward, and pulls off a strip. It's not her favorite food, but it works. The people in town call her Elena. They have a name for every moose in the area. And yes, there is a reason for that.
You're listening to The Cold Plunge, a radio play by Sonny Blechinger. This is Act One.
What did you do after Elena
became a moose?
Yes. What did you do after your wife became a moose?
This is Myrna Glass. Almost 40, depressed for good reason.
Well, let's see. That was on a Sunday, and the next day was a Monday. So I went to work.
And this is Carl Kowaleski, Myrna's boss. 65, emotionally deep into retirement.
That's it? You just went to work?
It was a Monday. And I work on Monday, so yeah.
They're seated at a booth, the linoleum floor, a chessboard of black and white, every seat cushioned shiny red, the window curtains checkered with little red chickens.
But wasn't everything different?
Well, everything? No.
You were married 43 years. She was always there when you came home.
Well, that's true.
He opens his pillbox, swallows his daily dosage.
The house is quieter. It doesn't smell as good as it used to, but I put on records and I got these plug-in air fresheners.
The diner is Misha's Pancake House. Not the only game in town, but it is for Carl. He and Myrna just finished the one item on the menu.
We should have another.
I'm full.
A miss.
Here she comes.
Oh, Christ, she's wearing the shirt.
Meanwhile, Petal Bunce, veteran postal carrier, just transferred here from a much warmer region, not by choice. She is now being driven in an old mail truck from the small airport into town. She looks around the cold metal interior, cracked vinyl seats, frosted windshield.
This must be an older model.
Petal's in her mid-40s. Her focus and calm belies the long flight she just took.
The best model.
And he goes by Fish. Barely 20, wears a mullet and a mustache. Everything he says is weighted with importance.
You don't want to break down in these parts. You know, minus.
You're referring to the temperature?
Sometimes 30 below.
Yes, well, that's why I got this coat.
Gonna need something warmer.
It's fleece lined, made for Arctic weather.
Don't worry. I got all your gear at the mailroom.
I'm not worried.
He suddenly swerves in and out of the lane.
Whoa!
Chunk of snow back there. I crushed it.
Okay. The road is icy, so you should maybe...
Used to be stands of people chanting, go fish, for me, right? I took Pollenberg puffins all the way.
Puffins?
Puffins! You watch ice hockey, right?
No.
No?
No.
Oh.
He swerves again, crushing another chunk of snow.
I wouldn't mind driving.
Good idea. Hit the ground. Rolling. Get it? Rolling.
You can pull over up there.
Up ahead, on the right, the trees clear and the snow thins. A perfect spot to pull over. And Fish drives right past it.
That was the spot.
There's a better one.
Who's ready for more?
The server, early 70s, wears a shirt that reads, "No pain, no gain," with a black and white photo of two babies silk-screened underneath.
I am.
I'm full.
The server sets two heavy plates with pancakes next to their empty plates, still sticky with syrup.
They're real warm, and the maple syrup is warm, and together, they're just...
I'm not eating this. Also, you know that shirt is maybe not the most professional?
12 hours of labor, but I'm not complaining.
I've never heard you complain. You're just a hard worker.
That's right. Did you see what it says? It says, no pain, no gain. See?
She grabs the bottom of her shirt and pulls it down a little so the front goes tight against her cone-shaped wire bra.
Oh, wow, yeah. That's, Yeah, I see it.
Carl blushes and looks down at his food like a teenager.
I can't do this.
Myrna starts to get up.
Wait, your question. Maybe she can help.
No.
What question?
Oh, my God.
Myrna's wondering what people do after their other half becomes a moose.
It's okay, really.
When your father went, that son of a bitch.
Ma.
But what? He left me alone with two babies.
He didn't know you were pregnant.
She lets go of her shirt and reaches over the table to pick up Carl's empty plate, looking at him as she does so.
All alone.
That couldn't have been easy.
It wasn't.
She stays leaning over the table far longer than necessary while locking eyes with him.
I think I need another pill.
I'll get you some water.
But she doesn't move, just stares at him. And he stares back, a deer in headlights, wanting very much to look down her shirt but holding her gaze instead. At the same time, Myrna pours the entire pitcher of warm maple syrup onto her empty plate and rests her cheek right there in it. If anyone were paying attention, they'd see her reflection shimmering in the sweet substance as it coats her hair. They'd see the smallest of smiles spreading on her face, the same smile mirrored in the syrup. They'd see that for her right now, the world gets quiet and she feels better. It is nice to see her this way. If only for a moment. Fish finally pulls over to his chosen spot, which doesn't look much different from the one that Petal had pointed out. They switch seats and Petal's driving the mail truck now, something she's done a million times.
You'll want to shift into third.
I know.
Past this corner is the best view. Uncle Joe's spot.
Oh, your uncle lives up here?
I mean, in the vicinity.
They round a bend, and Petal slams on the brakes just in time to avoid hitting a moose nibbling at something in the road.
Oh, that was close.
The moose lifts its head to look at them, its antlers rising well beyond the height of their truck, an absurdly large creature.
It's huge.
Careful. Uncle Joe's sensitive.
I thought you meant your real uncle.
I do.
Okay. Is it safe to go around him?
Nope.
So, what do we do?
Kill the engine. You gotta hear this. It's epic.
Petal hesitates.
It's okay. Don't worry.
Petal fights her instincts and turns off the engine. Fish rolls down his window. A moose blares again, rich overtones that almost change the color of the air.
Wow, just look at him. Oh, actually don't.
The moose gives them a hard stare while urinating in the road.
Don't look, he can't go.
He's doing just fine.
As if on cue, the moose stops midstream.
See, he couldn't finish.
Is he making eyes at us?
Told you not to look.
The moose lowers his head, paws at the ground, and charges. All 1,400 pounds of him running straight at the mail truck.
Whoa, whoa, whoa! What do I do? Shit, what do
I... Uncle Joe, what are you doing?
Fish snaps off his seatbelt, pulls a handgun from the glove box, and steps outside. Normally, Petal might ask why he keeps a firearm in a federal vehicle, but right now, all she can muster is...
Jesus Christ, Fish, what? Fuck Jesus!
Uncle Joe!
He raises the gun and shoots at the icy blue sky. The moose startles, but doesn't back up. He snorts and takes a step towards the mail truck, lowers his head and leans his face right up to the windshield, his antlers rubbing the roof and his nostrils fogging the glass. He looks deep into Petal's eyes, who is frozen in terror. The moose snorts again, holds eye contact with Petal as a glob of mucus lowers from his nostril and touches the windshield, slowly wobbling down the glass. An eternity of a moment passes until finally, the creature turns and ambles off.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
The fish gets back into the passenger seat and returns the gun to the glove box.
Anyway, there's a pretty good view of the town over there.
Petal, in shock, looks to where he's pointing, a snowy valley with a small town, little chimneys curling smoke into the air.
That's where we're headed. Brahlenburg, Alaska. Founded in 1894. Exactly 100 years ago. Yep. We should probably get moving.
Petal doesn't move. Just watches the little dot that is the one stoplight in town turn from red to green as a pickup truck that looks like a toy stutters through the intersection. The distant pickup truck drives another block and then turns and parks at the Prahlenberg post office. From here, Carl and Myrna are barely visible as they step out and go through the employee door and into the mailroom, which hasn't changed in 30 years. They walk past the walls, which are still coated in the same honeydew melon green, past the same grid of cubbies filled with envelopes, past the ramp at the loading dock and the cage on wheels half full of snow-dusted packages, past the sorting machine chugging away and the mailbags bulging in a corner. They even pass the counter where Fish and Petal will soon be standing as he issues her federally mandated gear.
Mailbag, sorting apron, postal shorts, these you're gonna need.
Am I still in shock or is it really this warm in here?
Nice, right?
The only post office in town was built in 1961, just 2 years after Alaska became a state. Radiators were installed, turned up way too high, and no one's ever been able to adjust them. The mailroom is the worst, which is why everyone keeps a pair of shorts in their locker.
Flashlight, on-off switch, right there.
We're not gonna
flashlight.
Talk about what just happened.
It's your first day. I'll let it slide.
Shouldn't we report the vehicle damage, or?
Get it? Slide.
A wild animal rammed our truck.
I mean, the mechanic will fix it. Wild animal. He's not wild.
And who is playing the trombone?
That would be Postmaster Carl. He's good. Right?
This is not the first or last time that Petal doesn't know how to respond.
Carl. Carl. Carl!
What?
What? You just... Oh my God.
Myrna sits in a metal chair in front of Carl's gray tanker desk, hugging a canvas bag full of mail. Her hair juts out on one side in a wild direction, hardened and shiny from the maple syrup.
Your mother is sure nice.
That's why you asked me in here? Look, if you want to date my mom...
Well, I don't.
She obviously does.
You think so?
I think I should get started on this mail.
She gets up and Carl blurts.
I'm retiring in 2 days.
I know.
You could be the next postmaster.
I know.
But you won't.
I... No. I'm sorry. It's not for me.
It's a good job. Why will no one take it?
I think it's hard for people to imagine anyone but you in the role. Someone will step up. Wait, did you ask everyone before me?
Well, not everyone.
Oh, Jesus.
He might be good.
His frontal lobe hasn't developed.
No one else will do it.
So don't retire. It's not what you think.
Don't retire. That's funny. Like one of those jokes, you know? Those jokes, those funny jokes.
I should get to work.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
And that is the full allotment. The postal shorts are not required, but they are recommended. In here.
Yeah, I get that. Whew. It's warm. Shouldn't I get started on my route?
Uno momento. First week, you have to ride with someone. We bend the rules sometimes, but mostly not. Case in point, you see this mullet?
My eyes keep going there.
I understand. It's a beautiful object. Not strictly a violation, but, you know, frowned upon. And no one says a word.
Okay.
Hey, are you the new transfer?
Hi, yes. I'm Petal Bunce.
Petal's eyes dart to the side of Myrna's hair, stiff from the maple syrup and reaching out like a plant searching for sunlight.
Myrna Glass, you're riding with me this week.
Petal is unsure if this is a good or bad development, and she responds with a word that could mean either.
Great.
I issued all her gear. Myrna, I issued all her gear.
Myrna's driving her mail truck, pedals in the passenger seat, twisted around, digging through mailbags behind her.
Where are your trays?
No, I don't use trays.
You don't? Then how do you sort the mail?
It's all in the bags.
So it's not sorted.
I have a system. It works fine.
Really?
Yes. By the end of the day, we'll do 20, maybe 30 houses.
That's it?
You can do better?
Yeah, like 500 or 600.
In one day?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then with 500 or 600 mistakes. No, I'm not gonna rush this.
Myrna parks under a spruce tree at the end of a residential street. Small houses with thick strips of snow between them. They step outside and Myrna yanks one of the canvas mailbags from the back and lets it drop in the snow. She loosens the cord at the top of the bag and peers at the pile of envelopes inside.
Just let me find the mail and you walk it over to the boxes.
She reaches down into the mailbag deep enough that her cheek now rests on top of the envelopes and her syrup-stiffened hair is pointing straight up. She suddenly relaxes, smiling at Petal.
Still warm. From the mailroom.
Right.
Petal stands there with her arms folded while Myrna closes her eyes and feels around inside the bag.
Found one.
Myrna stands up, pulling an envelope out of the bag and handing it to Petal.
Walk this over to that box. I'll find the rest.
Sure.
Petal walks over to one of the mailboxes. The flag is up. She opens the box and pulls out a stamped envelope, then inserts the one she was holding. This simple, familiar motion relaxes her, and she almost laughs, looking forward to the day when this is a funny story that she can tell another post office in another town very, very far from here. She turns to look back and...
Oh, holy God.
A large moose is standing right behind Myrna. Watching her dig in the mailbag, Petal feels paralyzed and barely able to speak.
Moose! That's Moose! Myrna!
Almost in perfect symmetry, Myrna stands up from the mail as the moose lowers its snout, licks its lips, and then licks her hair. Myrna smiles as if it's a trusted pet. She reaches up to rub the creature's neck as it licks her head clean.
Oh, okay, buddy. Okay. Easy now. They like maple syrup.
Yeah, but that is dangerous. I've encountered moose before, and they are very dangerous, I know.
Well, according to the town, he's my father, so must be fine.
What?
Don't worry, I don't believe in any of that. I'm one of the only people who knows.
Knows what?
That you don't become moose just by jumping in a lake.
Of course you don't.
Sorry, you're not from here. Sometimes I forget the rest of the world is normal.
It is not.
I know, but in this one way, I guess.
So that's why Fish called that one his uncle, because...
He thinks it's really his uncle.
Are you saying people jump in a lake up here? Isn't it frozen?
Mm, There's one lake that doesn't completely freeze. It has this opening in the middle. People jump in and they don't come up.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So, your dad?
Yeah.
And Fish's uncle?
Sort of the religion here. Well, not sort of. It is.
How in the world did this start?
I guess how they all start. With a priest. Or at least a guy who plays the role.
Val Ivchenko V wears clothing that is one size too small, and despite his salt and pepper hair, has always appeared too young to be the town priest. Maybe because his father and grandfather before him were all larger, more confident men.
Fuckity, fuckity, fuckity.
Or maybe he hasn't quite grown into the role. His small home attached to the church is toasty from the fire he built this morning, though it never seems to relax him.
Balsh, balsh, balsh.
No one swears around the priest, so he's never learned how, but it's the one unwritten rule he breaks. Only in private, of course. Sometimes he's even creative.
Beaver wiener!
It does seem to help him focus, especially when engaged in a difficult task like preparing the weekly sacrament. There's no bread or wine involved, rather, local religion has the residents inhaling the essence of tree bark from a Sitka spruce and chewing on dried strands of pondweed, common foodstuff in the diet of a moose. He's engaged in these preparations now, and it is, well, difficult.
Fuckity fuck fuck crack.
The pondweed must be pulled apart into strands no wider than a human hair, which are then laid out to dry on a strip of muslin. Val uses a wooden ruler to ensure that each strand is set exactly 1.5 inches apart. But sometimes he lays one down 1/8 of an inch off, and he doesn't notice until he's laid down 10 more, all of them now needing fine adjustments.
Balsh.
Of course, it doesn't matter if they're exactly 1.5 inches apart. These rules were written down in a moment of drunkenness by his great-great-grandfather, Valentine Ivchenko I, a man who turned out to be a monster. Arval V looks out the window and sees a mail carrier bending over a mailbag, her arms deep inside the canvas.
Myrna.
Anyone else who felt as he does would burst through the door and run to the woman whose hair is always askew from maple syrup or moose saliva, often both. The woman with thick eyebrows and heavy depression. Anyone else would already be at her feet, confessing their love. But Val has chosen to kneel where he is, carefully pulling the laces through his boots so that they are perfect and snug. He finally steps outside, wanting very much to hustle, but he is not supposed to hustle. He is supposed to stroll, hands behind his back, his priestly robe swaying like a church bell, and he just barely gets to her in time.
Lovely day.
Lovely day. There is so much he wants to share with Myrna, and that's what comes out.
Petal, can you give him his mail?
A mail carrier he's never seen before climbs out from the mail truck and eyes him suspiciously.
Sure. Here you go.
She holds out several envelopes for Val.
Those are supposed to go in the mailbox. Over there.
He points to the church mailbox 100 feet away, and Petal loses it.
Are you fucking serious?
Val's world explodes with color. For the first time in his sheltered life, homeschooled with his priest father, no television or VCR, only a collection of records, mostly choral music in Bach, Hildegard von Bingen, endless sonatas on recorder, clarinet, oboe, anything with reeds. The most lusty object in the house was the small Hammond organ, which he was allowed to play on Friday nights, and even that came with a twinge of guilt. And now, finally, this outsider talks to him like a regular person and shows him how to say the word fucking.
Thank you so much.
Jesus Christ, you're passive-aggressive.
She starts walking his mail to the mailbox.
You're so welcome.
Sorry about her father. She's new.
Quite all right.
He smiles and blinks at her.
Well, probably see you here tomorrow.
Yes, probably.
She turns to leave and...
Wait, do you see anything different? I'm trying to make some changes in my life.
He stands up straighter and somehow looks smaller.
That's good. I don't see it, but... Good for you.
She gives him a thumbs up, then turns to join this new person, and he wishes so desperately that he could do something extravagant. Sing, dance, beg, bury his burning face in the snow. But he stands there, breathing shallow breaths, hands behind his back. His teeth are chattering, and he realizes that he is incredibly cold. He went outside without his coat. That's something. That's new and different. He is changing, and this gives him comfort. Back at the post office, Fish is sitting at the front desk, the same sad, frustrated face he used to wear in the penalty box, where he spent most of his time in ice hockey. Back then, people believed the box to be his secret weapon. Every single time, the moment he was let out, he'd score the winning goal, then start another fight. He's been sitting at this desk now for 2 years, waiting for a similar moment of glory. Carl approaches him.
Fish?
Boss?
They don't look at each other. Just watch the snow fall through the foggy glass front of the building.
How are you holding up?
Had one angry patron. It was nothing.
Good. Should be lunchtime soon.
Yeah, I'm pretty eager to get out there.
A quiet minute passes.
Something I've been meaning to ask.
Oh, yeah?
You know, I'm retiring in a couple of days.
That's right. Your old lady's been moose for what? A whole year? I bet you're excited to join her.
Yeah.
They watch the snow fall for another minute.
Was that your question?
No. Well, remember your hockey days?
That time's over.
You were a natural leader on the ice.
Only got two knees and one of them's ruined.
Yeah, but you're still a natural leader.
What can I say? People look up to me.
Yeah.
So was that your question?
Yeah.
Carl walks outside and gets in his old pickup, starts it, and drives down the road, stopping at the one stoplight in town. He waits until the red light turns to green, and when it does, he eases on the gas. His mind preoccupied, he doesn't notice as he passes Myrna's mail truck going in the other direction. They don't notice either.
So I gotta ask, do people have a choice when they jump? Is there some kind of lottery?
Tradition is they jump at retirement.
Jesus.
They spend their whole life preparing for it.
They hit the one stoplight and wait for the red to turn to green. Several blocks behind them, Carl arrives for his appointment with the priest. He walks past the empty pews to the front of the church and sees the familiar strands of pondweed drying on muslin, each exactly an inch and a half apart. He grimaces at the sight, the acrid taste from the last time he took the sacrament still fresh in his memory. He considers turning around, going for pancakes instead, but then the priest appears, swinging a silver incense burner from its chain back and forth, thick and pungent smoke weighted with the essence of spruce bark surrounds Carl, who coughs.
Breathe in deeply. Your body fights it because you fight it.
Carl takes a deep breath, pulling thick tendrils of smoke into his lungs.
Good. Accept it as if it were pure mountain air, and your body will accept it as well.
Mm.
Val sets the incense burner on its tray and pinches one of the strands of pondweed, lifting it high and letting it sway in the smoke. Carl winces at the sight. He's chewed on these things for all of his life, and despite what they told him as a child, he has never gotten used to it.
I did have a question.
Val keeps his eyes on the pondweed, watching it blur in and out of the smoke.
Go ahead.
Well, I was wondering.
Carl searches for every word as if he's speaking a foreign language.
How I might initiate a delay?
It is 5 days before your plunge. If we delay your holy sacrament, then we must delay your plunge.
Well, I was actually wondering if I could delay my plunge.
You can't. It's scheduled for Saturday. And the final plunge is the next day. The final plunge. There's nothing after.
Carl looks for a moment like a sad child.
How long did you want to delay?
I hadn't really thought about it, but, well, 5 years would be lovely.
The priest blanches.
Or one.
Carl's face glows as he imagines a full year. The different seasons and outfits, the different foods and holidays, spending them all with Mrs. Glass.
The final plunge is this weekend. If you delay past that, it won't be for 1 year. You will delay this for the rest of your life.
Really? Wow.
Anyway, it's all ending soon enough. One last person will jump in, and then that opening in the ice is freezing over. For good.
How do you know?
Everyone knows.
But how do we know?
It's written in the scripture. The blessing on the lake will last 100 years. The date is clear.
Val can tell that Carl is still confused.
Sometimes it helps to explain the science behind it.
Really? Sorry, I just never thought that
I have nothing against science. What it tells us is correct. But it's young. Whereas religion is ancient and shrouded. So we must trust religion until the science catches up to explain. In this case, we're lucky. The science is there.
It's so obvious. Any fifth grader can see it's a hot spring. Although hot isn't the word. The heat's been fading as long as we've been here. That's why it doesn't do much to the lake. Most of the surface freezes. The few bubbles of warmth that do rise up, they're only enough to keep this slushy opening in the center. It's not warm, but not nearly as cold as the rest of the water.
Shall I tell you again about the princess and my great-great-grandfather?
The priest.
The founders. They were the first to discover this magic, and they knew.
The magic is real.
Why moose?
I guess because they're around. An easy thing to point at? I don't know. None of it makes sense. It's things people buy.
But not you. You grew up here. I would understand if you believed in all this, but you don't.
I've seen the bodies. In the lake? Nobody's turning moose. They're just dying down there.
You have to show people.
No one will go.
Well, what made you go?
I guess I was curious. I was 12, and I wanted to see where my dad went. I'd never met him. The story was he got a wild hair one night. It was after my mom got pregnant, but before either of them knew. And he ran out there and jumped in. Anyway, at 12, I walked to the center of the lake, right up to the edge of that slushy opening. I couldn't see anything through all the pebbles of ice floating there, so I squatted down and put my hand in it, swirled him around. That's when the ice that I was on, it snapped.
The founders of our town loved each other so much that a spell was created, a 100-year spell, to keep them together for eternity.
These people, they spend their life eating fucking tree bark and pondweed, as if that's gonna prepare them. I have no idea what it feels like, freezing cold water. All of your nerves light up. Every inch of your skin clenches and screams the same thing. Get out. This is a mistake.
And everyone after, once they can no longer perform their duties, at the time of retirement, they may also transform.
And down there, I saw them. Skeletons. Some with skin. Everything seemed to slow down. I don't know if I had swallowed water or what, but the panic I felt was gone, and I... it didn't seem like I needed air. That moment still haunts me. I think it must be when everyone thinks they'll transform. But it's when you give up. Something happens in the brain that makes you accept it, even welcome it. I must have been closer to the surface than I realized. Someone shoved a tree branch in the water. I watched myself reach for it, and they pulled me up.
Is this what you really want? To miss your chance? Your chance to reunite with your wife?
I don't know.
You were married for 43 years.
We were.
She loves you.
She does.
And you love her?
Of course.
Then the choice is easy. Let yourself be with your love while you still can.
Val brings the pondweed to Carl's face. Carl tilts his head, opens his mouth, and takes it with his teeth, chewing slowly, deliberately, sneering at the taste.
So who was it, with the branch?
My sister. Twin sister. We had been inseparable since birth, but around then a tension had developed and we were spending more time apart.
But not that day.
No. Thank God. I didn't know it, but she had followed me out to the woods. She saw me fall in and ran for a thick branch, pulled me out, and then kind of wrapped herself around me, giving me all her warmth. It was the last time we hugged. We used to hug all the time.
Wait, you must still talk.
Here and there. But we're only growing further apart.
But you're twins. That bond.
Fraternal. So we don't look alike.
That doesn't matter.
We don't think the same either. Or believe in the same things.
Myrna parks at an apartment building with a grid of mailboxes by the stairs.
I told you how normally people take the plunge at retirement. But for the final one, they had a contest to see who would go. And my sister was the lucky winner.
No.
She thinks it's a great honor.
There must be a way to stop this.
I've tried.
Or get someone to switch with her.
There is nothing you can do.
Myrna gets out and walks to the back of the mail truck. Petal sits a moment, then steps out to join her.
I know it's not the same, but, I could give you a hug.
Thanks, but we should get moving.
She yanks out a mail bag and lets it drop in the snow, then tries to loosen the cord at the top. The cord is stuck in a tight little knot, and Myrna, struggling with something that is normally easy, looks like she might cry or scream.
Oh. Here, let me.
Fine, sure. It's stuck. You just have to...
Petal kneels down.
Oh, yeah, that is a tough one. I think I... Almost.
She looks up at Myrna and smiles.
Just about there.
Petal's instincts are kicking in. Something she's had all her life. Maybe from being the oldest of four, or maybe because she grew up taller and stronger than all of her friends. Whatever the reason, whenever she sees someone hurting, her instinct is to help. She unties the knot and opens the bag.
Okay. So how does this work? I stick my arms in like this?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
And what does it feel like? What am I looking for?
There's lots of tenants at this building, so...
Pick one.
Myrna hesitates. She's never explained her system to anyone. No one's ever asked.
Well, Miss Schroeder and her secret love, they always send letters. His have scotch tape on them because he doesn't think they'll stay closed. And Mr. Vogel, upstairs, he should be getting his disco magazine. He's shy about that, but the company sends them in this thick, black plastic. It feels different than the other plastic and makes a little squeal if you rub it.
Oh, I think I found one.
Really?
She pulls out an envelope.
That's not it.
Oh.
But keep trying.
Oh. Oh, good. I thought you wanted to take over.
That's exactly what Myrna wants.
No, it's the only way to learn. You should keep going.
Petal stuffs her arms back in the bag, going deep enough to rest her cheek on the mail.
Still warm. How is that possible?
The mailbag is waxed canvas, so it traps the heat in.
Feels amazing hugging it like this.
Yeah, I guess.
Tell me what else I'm looking for.
Okay.
The Cold Plunge was written and directed by Sonny Blechinger, starring Kurt Conroyd as narrator, Samiret Rios as Myrna Glass, Bruce Burkhartsmeyer as Carl Kowaleski, Claire Rigsby as Petal Bunce, Finley Vleer as Fish Oleski Pishkalnikov, Diane Kondrat as Mrs. Glass, Sonny Blechinger as Val Valentine Ivchenko. Trombone performed by Chris Shuttleworth. Casting by John San Nicolas. Recorded at Singing Sands Studios with sound engineer Callie Day. Mixing by Jeff Stewart Salzman. Sound design by Sonny Blechinger. Stunt driving by Evan Ling, Carl Christoffers. Story consultants, Jacob Aiello, Matt Coram, Dan Glabitzi. And my name is Debbie Ann Taylor. This project was funded in part by a grant from the Regional Arts and Culture Council. Thank you for listening.
Yeah. Whenever you're ready.
Alright.
Try, don't make any other sounds. Just jump in.
Just jump in?
Yeah, okay. Don't scream or anything.
I won't, okay. Just tell me when you're ready.
I'm ready.
Okay. Is that good?